Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, Tristan, you're up all night. When you went to bed, with your darkest mind.
Welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is August the 19th, 2017. My special guest tonight is Scott Nykelski from the band Go Time. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me again, John.
Man, it's always great to talk to you. And I think this is just so exciting what we're doing with breaking these albums down because, and I really appreciate you coming on and doing this because they're what I think is so incredible and important is we hear songs, but we really don't know what goes into them. We don't really know the history. And I just love that. I love the history of of rock music and of the bands and how they progress. And I don't think you can get too much more interesting than Wilco.
Well, it's particularly interesting because my world is all about sort of the history of music, as well as being a writer and a producer and so forth. So, you know, somebody like Wilco particularly is interesting because you think of a band that sort of started out as more or less sort of a rootsy, folky, almost kind of country band with AM,
right.
Which would sort of bring the history of Jeff Tweedy back from Uncle Tupelo, who was definitely a rootsy band.
Right.
And then you've got somebody who steps into the band, like Jay Bennett, and brings them in this whole new direction with a lot of his influences of let's say, George Harrison and the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds.
Now, how did that...
I think you can just smell that all over this record, actually.
I was going to ask about that because, you know, we want to get into it, and when musicians work together and they're artists, right? So they're going, you know, they're creative people and they want to work on things. And some of them have a real good gift of working with other people and some don't. And some
sure.
like, okay, I'm going to paint my picture and how do you like it? It's pretty cool. And other people say, yeah, that's kind of neat, but I think the tree should be this and that. Some people are good at that, Scott, and some people aren't. And how do you think Jeff Tweedy was at that point coming into Summer Teeth? And for the listeners also, there was a lot going on in the late 90s with technology. Technology was changing. And
sure, technology, I think, was changing. But what I do find interesting about that whole scenario is that a lot of the instruments that Wilco was using and so forth were really kind of analog instruments just dropped into a digital landscape, I guess, if you could call it that. Where everyone was changing from, I guess the progression was we all used to use reel-to-reel, then we went from reel-to-reel that got dumped onto DAT tape, which was more or less like a small videotape, and then it moved later to the whole world of digital where you could just edit the heck out of everything. And
yeah.
I think that it made the landscape completely different where you could more or less do anything electronically.
So how did that influence? Okay, so you've got Jeff Tweedy, who I think personally is one of the most interesting guys. I mean, wow, he goes, when you listen to his interviews, and if you know, the listening audience, if you haven't listened to too many of Jeff's interviews, they're nothing but interesting. They'll go from all kinds of different places, and Jeff, you know, was one of those guys that I've heard interview quite a few times, and I think he's always been real honest with what he says and how he approaches things. How do you think that was, Scott, when they went into the Summer Teeth sessions and what was Jeff's vision and what happened with Jay's vision?
You know, it's funny that you say, because I actually have a pretty good background on this. As you know, Goat Times always work with Mike Hagler at King Size Sound Labs here in Chicago, who was the place where Wilco actually recorded Summer Teeth. It was mainly mixed there, or at least the first mix of it, and Mike was the engineer. So we always kind of talk back and forth about these things occasionally. So, and then, of course, they put out that album, or not album, but the movie, I'm Trying to Break Your Heart,
yeah.
Which was sort of about Wilco at the time of them making Summer Teeth. So I think that Jay sort of came into the band right in the air, like right during being there, just sort of as a bit player, but obviously stepped up and changed the whole vision of what the band was doing. But I think in the long run, sometimes like a lot of musical geniuses, which in a lot of ways I think Jay really was. He had that Brian Wilson, I guess, type bend to him in terms of working in a studio, and I think it drove Jeff crazy by the end of the project.
That's pretty cool. Now, a lot of us, including me, have never, you know, just so you know that Scott is in the band Go Time, and if you need to know more about the band, which you should, and go out, their albums are on CD Baby and iTunes and Bandcamp, and you can go on gotimeband.com. I believe that's the website.
You are correct.
Good. And I highly recommend it. Scott and I have been friends for quite a while, and I love the band. I love their music. And one of the things that I want to do tonight, Scott, is so, you know, you've been in the recording studios. You've done all this stuff. A lot of us from the outside, we see the product, right? It's like we see
sure.
the pie. We see the hamburger. We see the sausage. But we don't know how it's made, you know, as they say. And that's what I think would be cool to know tonight, because when groups get together and people get together, and I guess we've mentioned, you know, Jeff Tweedy, we've mentioned Jay Bennett, but there are other people in Wilco at that time, but you don't hear
sure.
too much about them. And I've heard that they were kind of not even that involved in it.
I think that when you've got those type of writers going on, I think, well, obviously, what's his name? John Stirratt, I think, is still on bass, who was in at that time. And I think, I forget the drummer's name, maybe. Is it Glenn Kotke or something? I'm not sure. I think is still in the band as well. But I think Jay was replaced by two people after that point. So it's very interesting that, you know, I think it was very cool that Jay actually elevated them to a whole new band. And then they sort of ran with it after he was gone. You know, I'm not saying that they didn't, you know, change their style or do anything different or think on their own, but I think he was a catalyst for that band to change from a roots band to who they are today, which is interesting.
I think it's really interesting. I think it's interesting how that – it's like, you know – sometimes I think this, like, a band really works hard to get an identity. And in marketing, you know, you say, well, like, okay, so we're going to have a band and we're going to get out there and we're going to get a distributor. We're going to get a record company. We're going to get people. Okay, where do you fit? You know, oh, you fit in adult contemporary. Oh, you fit
sure.
in, you know, country. You'd fit. Sometimes they have a hard time doing that. You know, the record producer guys and the guys that are, you know, the suit guys. And then here you got the band, like you said, kind of fitting into more of a country mode, coming out of the Uncle Tupelo stuff, which is great stuff. And
sure.
then you start looking at, okay, we're going to change everything. We're going to start sounding different. And I think that personally, I love it. I love the progression, and I love it when bands do that, when musicians go forward. We're going to talk a little bit, Scott, about the Beach Boys here and, you know, Pet Sounds and Brian Wilson and how that, gosh, to this day, I still, you know, I've seen Brian play live several times and with his band, and it's mind-boggling to me. It's just totally, I'll play some of his music and I'll think, there must be another planet somewhere.
Well, there's something in my head that always says that sooner or later, after you've made a lot of records, and maybe you're not a Beach Boys fan as a guy who makes records, but there's some point when you're starting to make them where you hear that record and you say, oh my gosh, and you think, this came out in, I don't remember the exact year, I think it was 1968 maybe, but there was not a lot of technology, and this guy was able to take very low track things and mix it together and just make an incredible masterpiece that obviously influenced people like Big Star, REM, Wilco, I mean, everybody under the sun. And I think that sometimes as you mature as a musician, you hear something like that, and I think every band someday, you know, along the way, unless they just don't get that far in their maturity, say, wow, I'm either influenced by this or I want to do something like this in some manner.
Right.
You know, it always seems to shade you somehow.
Yeah, and that's what I think when you look at Pet Sounds, Beach Boys, and, you know, go, I Get Around, and all the surf songs and all the songs about the cars and the girls and stuff like that. And that was really cool. And I love that music. I really do. I grew up with that.
Sure.
But then all of a sudden, man, things started changing. And like you said, in Brian's mind and in Brian's heart and in his genius, and things started changing and he couldn't stop it. You know, it was like, I can't stop this. And today, Mike Love and those guys still wish they were pre Pet Sounds, pre Smile, pre all of that stuff, because it was like a gold mine. You know, it was like, why should we change, man? It's like, we've got everything where we want it. We're selling records, we're touring, we're doing everything. And now, Brian Wilson, you want to change everything, and then we can also use it. And now, Jay Bennett, you want to change things. How do you think that...
Yeah, and as I remember, actually, when Brian came along to change things, as I recall, when Pet Sounds came out, it was an absolute commercial flop, except in the UK.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's as far as selling records and numbers of records, yeah, I don't know if Summer Teeth, I don't think it did all that great either when it first came out.
I still feel it became like a benchmark for that band.
Oh, I would agree with you. There's nothing better for me just to listen to, sit back and listen to an album in its entirety and listen to, you know, how the group progressed. You listen to some of the earlier stuff. Now, we want to kind of go back to the song we started off with. And we start off with Shot in the Arm. And
sure.
For you guys out there that are listening, we want to kind of look at the different songs, and from a technical standpoint with Gear Talk, because I think, you know, like we talked a little bit, Scott, the finished product comes out, but we want to know from your perspective and from, you know, you working with Mike Hagler about how this really worked within the studio, because how is that all happening? I mean, you get together and when they get the concept and they say, okay, we've got this song, kind of step us through that. And then kind of, if you can, talk a little bit about Shot in the Arm, because that's quite a song. That's a really good song. And I'm going to say this real quick. A lot of the songs sound like pop songs, like you could hear like a, you know, on any kind of show or any genre,
sure,
of radio, but the lyrics are a little dark.
That song is particularly dark, which, you know, even in my own writing, I like to tend towards the world of dark a little more, because I think it's always a little more interesting than writing the typical girl, car, happy, sad, you know, I'm happy type song.
Oh, yeah, the Mike Love perspective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's funny, because when I've actually talked to Mike at King's, Mike Hagler, that is, at King Size Sound, which oddly, you know, some of your fans listening want to hear a really interesting take on everything that's going on here. Also, I believe there's like a box set that came out called Alpha Mike Foxtrot, which is actually retakes, Mike Hagler's retakes from King Size Sound Studio.
Oh, wow.
For a couple of the albums he worked on with Wilco. And you hear some of these songs in the original format, and some of them are much more sparse or trashy sounding, and some of them are slower. I mean, that's the one thing I say is Tweedy and Bennett as a team would take a song and maybe run it three or four different ways till they came up with what they felt was right, which is always interesting. You know, so it sort of tells me that they, you know, they had the basics of the song, the outline, but the end result was not always necessarily predetermined. I think there was a lot of experimentation, which is interesting, you know, to see where you can take a song.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to this. Where does economics come into this and the record company that's paying for it? And the people that are sitting there thinking, okay, this is cool and everybody's doing their own thing and they're all writing this and they're all doing that, but this has got to produce money. We've got to get money, because I also read somewhere, I think, Scott, where they didn't really think there was any singles out of this album.
Oh, yeah, I had heard that. And I, in many ways, I really don't think there kind of is, unless you go to a format like alternative radio or possibly college radio, which actually, as you know, of Wilco, they were very much a grassroots type band, and I think that's how they sort of built themselves. And still till today, I mean, they're not a band that I think sells millions and millions and millions of records, but yet I think that they figured out how to tour economically and put out records and have enough so everybody's comfortable,
yeah,
but yet not lose their artistic vision.
So how does that work in the studio when, in this case, I'd have to look this up. I'm not sure what record label they were on. Let's see. Reprise Records. So they were on.
I was going to say Sire, but okay, Reprise could be right. They're about the same size record companies.
Yeah, so then they're paying for it. So there's always that economic, that money part of it, that a lot of artists or musicians may think, you know, I don't really care about that. I just want to get my music out there. There's got to be somebody, right, Scott, watching the meter?
Somebody, you know, it's funny that you say, because I think that you see more and more today, you know, studios are a little strapped to get people in the door. Because everybody, you know, even for example, GoTime, we've got a state-of-the-art studio, and we just invested in ourselves so we don't have to pay studio time.
Yep, and that's cool.
After it's all done, we take it to be mastered and off to production, and there we go. And I think you see the same with Wilco, because they've got their spot, I think they call the loft, which I think they do all their basic tracking in, and then take it somewhere to mix or have someone mix. You know, so I think, but I think at the time when they did Summer Teeth, I think they did some of that, but just knowing Mike at King Size Sound, he probably got into the project and turned the meter off, realistically, where I think that there was probably more hours put in than they were charged for.
Yeah.
And I think more or less the record companies would come along and give you X amount of dollars and say, here you go. And if you couldn't do it within those dollars, well, you better find them yourself. So,
yeah, that's a rough side of it, I guess, the realistic side of it.
Yeah, and that's why I think that you see today more and more bands are trying to figure out how to do things on their own, record at home, do their basic tracks, and then take it somewhere. So it gives them the time to, or the ability to stretch a little bit.
Now, when you, yeah, that does. When you listen to Shot in the Arm, what do you hear? I mean, there is so much going on in that. I mean, seriously, I was listening to that, Scott, and there's like all kinds of things happening in that recording.
You know, the things that really stand out to me, you know, and when I went through and listened to this and just sort of made some notes, I really looked for the basics of what I thought was driving the song. And for me, the bass line was really evident. It's carrying the song. But so is the they're actually doing like a looping piano. I don't think that was played consistently, because it sounds like it's very chopped, like it was put together. So that line, like da 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 da, you know, that I think that whole piano line was just continually looped and cut and pasted together. Though it's a major driver of the song. And the other thing that I thought, and I really love about this, is that I think it's one of the first songs on that record, because I think it's up towards the beginning of the record, there's a fair amount of use of just general noise, either at low volumes or high volumes during the song, which is interesting when you can harness noise as a, you know, as a texture. There's a lot of texture to that song, by far.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that. And when you listen to it, I'm thinking, okay, it's got a nice melody. It just bounces along real nice. And then you're thinking, what is that? It sounds like a bell going off, and maybe ocean waves I could hear. So,
sure.
Yeah, there was a lot happening. How does it, like, okay, so they're in the studio in 98, 99, somewhere in there. Technically, how does that, what were the, how could they, what was available for them that, I mean, it was all they had then, and they were using everything that they had. But like, if you were to take a snapshot, Scott, of what they were, what their studio was like, and what their engineering was like in 1999, compared to what it is in 2017, what are the biggest increases?
I would say probably, really, they were still using an early version of Pro Tools, which allowed them to take whatever tracks they had and dump them into the computer and then really play with them. Because Pro Tools have been around for quite a long time. But it's just continued to get better and better and more robust and more effects and more editing and everything else. But my gut feeling is, you know, what's smart about this song, this record, much like Pet Sounds, when something comes in, let's say if a fair amount of noise, like towards the end of that song, you hear how it just sort of really decays into chaos. As that noise is coming in, other things are going out, be it a guitar, be it part of the drums, you know. And that's an interesting thing you learn as you produce or record music. You've got to keep the listener on a consistent, you know, like on a boat ride. You don't want it to be too rocky, and the only way for it not to get like that is when something weird comes in, you better pull something out. Because otherwise it can just be almost like a distraction rather than keep them on the boat ride and they say, I want to get off the boat. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Or they stop paying attention. You know, you want them to float from the beginning to the end perfectly happy.
That's a great point, because right now in 2017, with all the music that we have available, the kids are growing up with an unlimited amount of music. I mean, they can listen to anything, any album that's out there. If you have, you know, Apple Music or whatever, you can listen to every album and immediately. So you listen to a song and you're thinking, gosh, that doesn't cut it. I'm going to listen to another song.
Sure.
I mean, that,
and I think that,
that yeah.
I think when you see it, even with musicians today or generally younger people, they only absorb music per song. They don't tend to listen to whole albums anymore,
right,
as a piece of work. So it's a different landscape these days.
Absolutely. And that's the way it was. You know, I think that I really, really love that part of it, where an album is, you know, is a piece, and it can be in two different, you know, sets, side one and two, A and B or whatever, but it flows, you know. It's got, you can have an album where it's like 10 singles on it, you know, and things like,
sure,
that. And I think that's, there's a place for that too, but I always kind of like it when you can kind of follow the stream of what's happening in the song. Now, we started off listening to Shot in the Arm, and we're going to play ELT, and then I want to play something from Jay Bennett, and also talk a little bit about, you know, the Beach Boys. And I want you, Scott, whenever you want to come in and say something that from your perspective, because you're going to have, you know, with your experience, a deeper perspective than I would. And what else, is there anything you would like to say about Shot in the Arm that we haven't talked about, and maybe set up ELT, the next song we're going to hear?
Well, this is actually, Shot in the Arm and ELT are probably my two favorite songs in this album. And, you know, Shot in the Arm, as you know, is a great song because it's obviously this real heavy, dense piece. ELT, I think, is really interesting because if you listen, Jeff Tweedy's voice on this song is completely different than the rest of the record. There's like a heavy chorusy effect on it. I think the guitar sounds are really just very strong sounding. You know, there's an overall compression that's sort of tightening this whole song up. And here again, they're using a noise, like noise effect, as a texture. Actually, I know that Mike Hagler did a second vocal on this song right behind Tweety on certain lines, very high.
Wow.
Also, they use a lot of synthesizer in this song, which is kind of different.
Actually,
I think at the beginning, you've got this opening with this really echoey, delayed lap steel, which, you know, it's either lap steel or pedal steel, which I think creates this great texture, and it sort of segues into the synthesizers. And then if you listen closely, there's some piano going on that sounds like it fell right off of Pet Sounds. When you listen closely, if you listen to these piano fills, they were somewhere on Pet Sounds. So I'm not saying it's a ripoff, but it just, you know, it'll sort of bring the whole Pet Sounds thing into view if you listen for the piano.
Well, let's listen to it. My guest is Scott Nykalski from the band Go Time, and you can go on gotimeband.com, and please pick up the records. Their music is great. I highly recommend it, and we're going to hear the song ELT from Wilco, and this is from the 1999 release Summer Teeth, which we're looking at through the musical microscope tonight. So stick around, and we'll be right back with more right after this.
Oh,
And I would like to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio's Gear Talk. My guest is Scott Nykowski from the band Go Time, and we're talking about the 1999 album Summer Teeth from the band Go. And we just heard Every Little Thing, or ELT. And one thing I heard, Scott, when I was listening to a YouTube interview from Jeff Tweedy, was the interviewer asked him about the subject matter of some of his songs. And in that one, I think he says something about wanting her dead or wanting somebody dead. And yeah, and he's going through this terrible breakup, I guess, with his wife or his girlfriend. And and so he's got these thoughts, and the person said, well, how do you feel about that? You know, I mean, you've got the thing that you wish she was dead, and you've got all this stuff, and there's, I guess there's something in there about you're asking me not to hit you. I forget what song that's in, but that's in a song. So
I think that, She's a Jar, it's in that song. Which is pretty rough.
And that's what I think is so interesting about, I mean, about Jeff Tweedy and about the band and about the interviews that I've heard with them, because it's like you never know exactly which way he's going to go with the interview, because he's real down to earth. He doesn't seem to be pretentious at all. I don't think he's trying to be anything. He's just real honest about it. But he can say some pretty off-the-wall stuff.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, and I'm not trying to out anybody or anything else, but he, we had a very famous, like, sort of indie club here in the 80s through the 90s called Lounge Acts in Chicago, and a friend of mine, her husband was the bartender there, Sue Miller, who's married to Jeff Tweedy, when Jeff Tweedy was playing there with Uncle Tupelo.
Okay.
So it was a bit of a click, but everybody kind of knew that Jeff was he had some depression issues.
Right.
There was no doubt about it, and I think they even mentioned that in the movie I'm Trying to Break Your Heart as well. And I think maybe, you know, like a lot of songwriters, you know, you sort of put your antenna up, and whatever comes, I mean, some people really work hard at it and just labor over every word, but I think there's a lot of songwriters, myself included, and I think Jeff's probably pretty similar, where, you know, it just sort of comes to you, and you just say, okay, it's coming in, let me run with it.
Yeah.
And you just sort of see where it goes, and you're kind of along for the ride a little bit. And, you know, who knows where it comes from, whether it's your subconscious or something you watched on TV or who knows what.
Yeah.
But you put it down, and then, you know, you sort of come back to it, and sometimes you even say, wow, I actually wrote that? You know, it's almost like somebody else was ghostwriting it for you, you know, especially the good ones, because the good ones come, you know, within 5 minutes, and then you're done. Yeah.
That's amazing.
You know, sometimes even faster than, you know, your pen can move. So, and I'm sure that, you know, who knows, maybe these are, and maybe this is Jeff's personal therapy. Also, you know, maybe it's a thing in a deep, dark place that he wants to say or do, but, you know, to blend into society, he can't. So this is his place to release it. You know, it could be that, too.
No, I think you've hit some great points. In the interview that I was listening to, the guy was kind of shocked that he was, you know, are you okay with that, you know, with this being out there? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, that came from a real honest place. He said, that's what you want as a writer. And he goes, even if it's talking about murder and all that, it goes, absolutely. He said, that was where I was at my best. He said, that's some of the best writing I've ever done, because that came from way down deep inside of me. And there was, he said, that I wouldn't change it for anything.
Oh, now, sure. And personally, I find when I'm having my worst day or I'm at my most depressed, that's when I do my best work, you know. So I get it, because sometimes you dredge up something that you just didn't think was in you. And
yeah, I think it's interesting. when you were saying, Scott, that you were listening to this music and you're like, wow, you know, that's coming from a place. Now, I've listened to quite a few of Jeff's interviews because I don't know what I would say to the guy, but I really enjoy listening to people that really know what they're doing. Like, Terry Gross has interviewed him a bunch of times and I really enjoy that. And I think we may have talked about this before, but he said, "Hey, I think you do the work. You work hard at being a musician. You learn your instruments. You learn the scales. You learn everything. You do all the work you possibly can. That all goes into your subconscious. That's all in there. You just keep loading it in, and then it'll come out." He said, "It isn't like it's not like an alien. Like I've had people tell me, you know, it's like." Muses and aliens and all kinds of stuff, I don't know, but with him he's saying just load it up, man, and then it'll come out. And I thought that's probably about as good of an explanation as I've heard about that, because I don't think it's anything he could just like, well, I'm just going to write this down. Does that make sense? Because I think some of the best music I've heard like seems to be coming from a different place than maybe the intellect.
Sure, and I think that sometimes when you do sit down, you can write a very basic song, and it can be good. It can still be a good song because you have the tools to make it a good song. But those ones where you dig deep, you know, and that come quick, those are really the ones that always are the standout. I mean, almost every songwriter you hear say, like, if somebody asks, you know, somebody about what they wrote and it's a big hit and they're like, yeah, it came quick. You know, that seems to be the most regular thing you hear. So
I think it's so cool. It's like, that's why, you know, I want to thank you for being on the show, Scott. Thanks so much. And getting your insight on this is amazing. Now let's play a Jay Bennett song. Let's play Whispers or Screams.
Sure, and actually, you know, going back to ELT for just a second, I kind of even realized while we were on the phone that sort of Pet Sounds piano sort of came in around the second verse, but also I noticed that during some of the choruses, there were definitely some Beach Boys-type ahs going on, and then at the end of that song, very Beach Boys-y-type choruses where they're going, it's gonna, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Definitely another influence from that direction.
Really pop songs with dark lyrics.
Sure.
Which
absolutely.
I think is it's pretty cool. It's like, oh man, I don't know. It's really good. So let's talk about Jay for a minute. And Jay Bennett, who came into the band, we're talking a lot about him today because in Summer Teeth, his influences came in. And how long did he stay in the band after that?
I think he came in somewhere when they were making Being There, or maybe he started touring with them just as like a side musician at the end of AM, and then worked on Being There, but obviously was more like, I don't want to say a hired hand, but he was brought in fresh to the group, so I don't think he really had a point where, you know, he was the man yet. I don't think he was able to really stretch his wings. I think he was trying to see what was going on. But I think if you, and I'm not sure, but I think I'd read, and I didn't look at the liner notes, but I think 7 out of the 11 songs on Summer Teeth were collaborations between Jeff and Jay. So that's most of the album that he helped him write. And then obviously, you know, when they did the Woody Guthrie albums, the Mermaid Avenue albums.
Right.
I know that Jay was very involved in that, and I think he was the one who actually got them involved in that directly. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. He was his own genius, and actually when you go and listen to most of his solo albums, especially the one that song you're about to play is off of, At the Palace at 4 a.m., it is an incredible record from beginning to end, and talk about something that is very Pet Soundsy, where there is just always something going on. It's like almost like auditory overload. That album is definitely it.
Well, let's play it. Yeah, it's and I Yeah, just play this and think about it as the listeners are out there, because that's what we want to do today. We want to just say, hey, you know, you hear a song, you know, a lot goes into this stuff, and we really appreciate, Scott, your perspective on this. So let's play. This is Jay Bennett, Whispers or Screams. You're listening to Independent Showcase, our episode of Gear Talk, and we'll be right back after this with Scott.
Recovered from the moment of legendary, just to find you don't have the strength to confess. You're dancing on the table last night in her dreams. Now are you blocking out her whispers and screams? Now I see you getting used to it. It's not to say how hard to get, 'cause when it's right, sunburns a hole in your head. Cause back in the night before I led you to bed, drank you under the table, and it wasn't a dream. Now are you blocking out the whispers and screams? And now your dreams have vanished into thin air, but you're still so big that you just don't care. Tonight, I hope that you sleep well. Just know that she's reliving your own private hell. As you lay there watching cable and you try to dream, are you blocking out her whispers or screams?
Now I see you've gotten used to it. It's not hard to say, hard to get, 'cause when it's right, there's no getting over it.
And you're back on John Talk Radio, our episode of Gear Talk with Scott Nikelski, and we are talking about the Wilco album Summer Teeth, and Jay Bennett was on that with Wilco, and we heard something from his solo album, and his first solo album, Whispers or Screams. Now, break that down a little bit for us, Scott, production-wise.
I was going to say, as a listener, because you just actually recently heard this, I mean, isn't that thing incredibly dense with stuff going on? I mean, it's like crazy dense. In fact, actually, this was actually mixed. Jay and Mike Hagler mixed this album together. And I had to laugh because Mike told me a story, because I guess that Jay came in and had sort of an older studio that was still using DAT tape, and he more or less just brought in like an old steamer trunk full of little DAT tapes. Like, yeah, here's the album.
Oh, wow.
and he said it was just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tracks, and he actually had to upgrade the studio to a newer version of Pro Tools that could handle so many tracks per song, because it was just, he had so much. But when I listen to this song, I mean, I hear acoustic, I hear piano, I hear B3 organ, lots of multiple voice layers. There's banjo. What's interesting is there's not a lot of drums or bass in it, but tons of guitar tracks, synthesizer, mandolin, 12-string. And what I found is really interesting is sort of the break, where there's a big break. It's almost like a solo that goes 12-string into piano solo, into like this baritone bass solo, into organ, and then it goes to nothing, just as vocal. So, I mean, that, you know, it takes some real organizational factors to be able to make something not fall apart that's that got that much going on.
That's a really good way to put it, because, you know, I'm listening and I'm thinking right off the bat, wow, I hear a lot of the B3. And now he played keys, right? Jay did.
Yeah.
And he brought the Mellotron into Summer Teeth, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, I think all of that keyboard work on that album is all done by Jay, which is, you know, he was a great guitarist, but, you know, at times I think he's even a better piano player or keyboard player, because he had so many different, you know, concepts going in his head with different sounds, with different things to drive the songs. You know, it's pretty impressive. So, I mean, you know, when you listen to something like that song, and that's not even the most dense song on the album. There's some that are even far more challenging with more instrumentation. But I always thought that was just a nice listen from beginning to end. You know,
now,
so.
How does that work, Scott, when you're producing? Now, when, like, he comes in and lays all these tapes down, and Mike is like thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do with this stuff? Is it difficult to get from somebody's head, from their concept and their, this is what I want, into the finished product, which is what they want, but maybe not how to get there? I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as far as, like, Jay's work, I think, is so dense. He really was doing the mixing with other people. So, I mean, he would sit with Mike and do it. I mean, there was a lot of talk back and forth when they were doing that. And they were definitely both at the board together. But, you know, at least, I just worked on a record for a different band called Letter Bomb in Chicago. And, you know, it depends how particular a band is. Sometimes they don't, you know, they hear what they hear live, but don't necessarily know how to put the parts together to be something that's consumable on a record, you know. And, of course, when you do get band people together or full bands, a lot of times everyone wants to hear themselves front and center. But that doesn't necessarily make for the best song. You know, because otherwise, if you're talking to a drummer, it'll be a drum album with no anything else. And the same with a bass player or a guitar. You know, so it takes some stroking, I guess, to get it to the level where, you know, you find out what the key instrumentation is that's going to drive the song, that's at the root of it. Because there's always something that's going to. Well, actually, when you were listening to this last song, you said the B3 organ, you heard that thing front and center.
Yep.
So that would probably be the driver of that song. And there was something that obviously told Jay Bennett, okay, this has got to be my driver to the song. Pay close attention to it and keep it front and center to hold all the rest together. So.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because, I mean, from my perspective, Scott, just listening to it, and I'm thinking, you would have to have like 1,000 people in the studio playing at the same time to get. And that's another thing we were, you know, I did an interview this morning with a band, and, you know, they were talking about when they went into the studio and what they had, you know, pretty young guys and working on some stuff and layering things. And I think sometimes it's kind of hard for them as young musicians to get across what they want it to sound like. And I was just wondering, if that was ever, you know, something with Wilco, because they had so many things going on. It was like, you know, what they say, like drinking out of a fire hose, or so many things coming at you at once.
Sure. And I think that's why usually somebody's got to take the lead on mixing a record, whether it be a band member or somebody else. And I mean, if you haven't made a lot of records on your own, I think, you know, if you're starting out or it's your first time out or your first couple times out, you better work with somebody, because if you leave it to your own hands, God knows what you're going to get at the end, because it'll be an absolute mess.
No. Yeah, and I totally agree with that. Now, have you heard Wilco live?
I have. I've seen them quite a few times, both Jay Bennett era and then afterwards. And even when they put out AM, of course, with them being from our city, Chicago, it's quite easy to come across them. So, actually quite a few times.
Well, what's their live show like? Just say like the last one you saw. I know it's probably progressed a lot, but.
You know, I think that it's really technically great. I mean, it's interesting because they can really reproduce some of this crazy stuff going on records. But I don't see them as, you know, if you can go and close your eyes and listen to the show, it's great. If you're going for like a wild show where you're going to see a lot of people jumping around or doing crazy stuff, no, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it depends what your level of fandom is or what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's true. Scott, thank you so much for being on. It's just been great, and I really appreciate it. We've just got a couple minutes left. What would you like to say in closing about this album, about Summer Teeth, and about, you know, something that you would like to share with the listening audience, and maybe they could go back and think, man, that, okay, I haven't really listened, or it's something I might not get out of the record. What's something you'd like to close with?
I think that they've got to go back and sort of compare, you know, everything prior to this album to what came after this album, and then listen to this album, because I think that this is the point, this is a pivotal point for this band where everything changed. And I think that part of it is the instrumental genius that was going on and use of different type of instruments, a lot of synthesizers, astral noises, bells, and just the overall arrangements are, you know, a lot of these songs have a lot of space, you know, as compared to some of the stuff you hear. Let's say if you listen to a Green Day record, everything sounds like it's in a little tiny box, like it's about to blow open. But these songs don't sound like that. They have a lot of space, even though there's a lot of stuff going on. So,
cool. Well, thanks, buddy. I appreciate you coming on. Anything going on with Go Time that we need to know about? Any news or gigs?
September 15th in the city of Chicago, I'll be playing an acoustic show, and on the 16th, the whole band will be playing. We've also got some dates in November, and I pretty much am about two or three songs away from being done writing our seventh album.
Oh, wow.
And then I'll hand all the demos over to the boys in the band and let them pick what's going to go on this record, and then we'll start a new one.
And we'll definitely want to have you on for that.
And we appreciate all your support, really. You've been fantastic to us.
I really like your band, the music. It's great, and it's just fun. So thank you. Thanks, Scott, and thank you for the listeners, people that support independent musicians out there. We really appreciate it. Everybody have a great evening. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We found a way to solve it. Make some